In Arabic, a genie, also known as a jinn, is a supernatural creature which occupies a parallel world to that of mankind. The Quran mentions that the jinn are made of smokeless flame and that they form communities just like humans. And just like humans, they can be good or evil. Up next, Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Phil Imbrogno, as we talk about their upcoming work, The Vengeful Jinn, Unveiling the Hidden Agendas of Genies. They'll be next on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, let's introduce you to a couple guests here first. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, you all know her, leading expert on the paranormal. Rosemary has researched, investigated, and written about the paranormal since 1983. Her extensive field work investigated hauntings, mysteries, sacred places makes her definitely a leading expert in the field, and she continues to research angels, demons, ghosts, spirit communications, magic, and shadow people. She writes a column for Taps Para Magazine and also is a consulting editor for Fate Magazine. Here's Rosemary Ellen Guiley. Hello, Rosemary. How are you?
Fine, thanks, George. Very busy this time of year. Lots of research.
Absolutely. Let's bring in Phil Imbrogno. Of course, he's been on the program many times before. He's been investigating and researching paranormal phenomenon for more than 30 years. He has been a science educator for years, has authored countless magazine articles on science and the paranormal, has appeared or has done research for a number of major organizations and television presentations on UFOs, astronomy, and the paranormal. He is writing a book with Rosemary Ellen Guiley called The Vengeful Jinn, Unveiling the Hidden Agendas of Genies, which will come out sometime in March, Phil, right?
Yes, George, in March, hopefully.
Well, super. And hello to you, and glad you're joining us as well. This is an interesting topic, Rosemary. How did you two key in on the jinn?
We started having conversations several years ago about our mutual interest in interdimensional entity contact and the areas where people are likely to encounter certain kinds of phenomena and the geographic and geophysical profiles of those. And we discovered we also had mutual interests in the jinn. Mine had started some years ago when I was researching angels and demons for a couple of my encyclopedias. And we found this topic quite fascinating, and both of us felt that the jinn are very much present among us, that they are behind a lot of the paranormal phenomena and interdimensional contact experiences that people have, and a lot of people simply don't know it because they don't know much about the jinn. So that's really what launched all of this.
And Phil, tell us about the jinn, and it's spelled D-J-I-N-N. Go ahead.
Yeah, D-J-I-N-N, and actually we spell it in the United States, J-I-N-N, but that would be the exact, with the D, Arabic translation. The jinn are an interdimensional beings that have existed before the human race, and they have interacted with the human race more in the past than they do now. They seem to be very secret. The jinn, the word jinn actually means hidden, and that's a good name for them. But that's what we call them as humans. But what they call themselves as a race, no one really knows. They're called hidden because the Arabic people used to believe that they were invisible and that they could not be seen by humans unless they allowed it. But being invisible now to theoretical physics means that you're not really invisible. You're in another parallel dimension that's very close to ours. And we cannot see them, but they being more dimensional than we are, they're not really physical beings. They seem to have the ability, or at least some of them, to enter our dimension and interact with us and look at us and observe us when we cannot see them.
This Middle Eastern approach to the jinn, though many other societies have this entity, how did it really focus around the Middle East, at least to start?
Well, it goes back to, you have to remember that the Middle East, the people, the Persians, the ancient Persians, they have a really long history. Not only the Persians, you know, people, the Babylonians and so on, they have a very long history of interacting with supernatural beings. And if you look at some of the records, they would say that, well, you know, if it's not angelic in nature, and if it's not human, if it's something in between, they classified it as being a jinn, and that would include all types of entities and fairies and so on, and earth spirits and so on. So it, the jinn, when you look at the jinn, people will say, well, they try to identify them and put them in one lump sum to identify them easily. But jinn themselves are a very complex society, and each jinn is different, just like human beings. They have different personalities, they have different likes, different dislikes. Some of them even have religions, some of them are atheists, some of them are good, some of them are bad. Some of them could care less about humanity, some of them can't stand humans, they don't like humans, some of them even are fascinated with they're fascinated with humans. But the Middle East has that history that goes back to record these encounters with these beings at that time. And as a matter of fact, you know, I'm beginning to believe that many of the so-called ancient gods of long ago could have been actually jinn.
Interesting. I remember as a kid seeing the Sinbad movies. My dad used to take me with them all the time. And they used to have genies in those movies that weren't particularly evil, but they were pretty mischievous. I mean, they did all kinds of things to old Sinbad and everybody else. So somebody in Hollywood picked up on the jinn, Phil, a long time ago.
Oh, yeah, sure. But the interpretation of the jinn, you see, the jinn in the Middle East, and people are very fearful of them. They respect them. They don't want to fool around with these beings. You see, some of them have become so, some of the people over there have become so terrified of them is that they started to make stories that kind of like downplay the jinn, and so that people would not be so fearful of them. So they added them as the genie and so on. And then when that was picked up in the Western world, it was translated into things like movies like The Brass Bottle, which was an excellent movie.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I Dream of Genie, I Dream of Genie. So that there was, and The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, which had a young green jinn, a child jinn. So when it was translated into the Western world, it was kind of like downplayed and made into a mischievous, magical being who's really harmless. But from the interviews that I've done, and I've spent time in the Middle East, and this is how I got interested in the jinn, traveling in the Middle East and picking up these stories, people are very serious about these particular beings. And I really didn't put it all together until about 2002, trying to apply that data to the UFO phenomenon and a paranormal phenomenon. And the jinn are actually mentioned in my first two books. I introduced the jinn into the paranormal and UFO world and interdimensional universe and Files from the Edge. So it's a fascinating subject, but it's very complex.
Absolutely. And how about the connection, Roseberry, between the jinn and the paranormal?
It's quite extensive. What we did in our research is we compared the jinn to angels, demons, fairies, shadow people, extraterrestrials, and cryptids like Mothman. And we have a very solid case for how the jinn can be a masquerade behind many of our encounters with these entities. We're not negating these entities, of course, but what we are saying is that the jinn, being tricksters and master shapeshifters, can adopt these forms to pursue their own agendas as the hidden ones with us. And the case is very, very strong, especially between shadow people, extraterrestrials, cryptids, and fairies in particular.
Now, this connection, it's been going on then, I assume, since really the beginning of time, right?
Well, we think that the jinn have been pursuing their own hidden agenda for quite some time. They, as Phil mentioned, they existed in Middle Eastern folklore pre-Islam, and they have a lot of demonic traits. And so when a lot of the tales about them got translated into the West, they were called the genie or sometimes even demons, but they are not quite the same. They're an entirely separate race. And according to the Quran, when God created man from clay, from earth and water, he instructed the angels, who he made out of a pure spiritual light, and the jinn, who are made out of a smokeless fire, he instructed the angels to prostrate themselves before his new creation. And the angels, having no free will, must obey, and they do. But Iblis, the leader of the jinn, did not, and he is identified as a jinni in the Quran, but he was among the angels. He had access to the angels, and he considered his kind to be superior to human beings, and he would not bow. And so he and his kind were cast out.
Sounds like fallen angels, right?
There's quite a similarity there, yes. And so they were condemned to the lower realms. Iblis did appeal to Allah for a chance to redeem themselves, and they have until Judgment Day. But he vowed that he would apply himself to tempting humanity to demonstrate the weakness of human beings. And that's very similar to the role that demons play in our culture.
How did these wishes come about when we deal with genies? Is that a Hollywood thing, or is that something else?
That actually exists in folklore, in Middle Eastern folklore. There are a lot of stories around King Solomon and his ability to control the jinn. He set them as slave labor to construct the Temple of Jerusalem and even the entire city of Jerusalem. And they can be imprisoned in these bottles and even rings. And if they are released, they are required to grant three wishes. A lot of these stories
To get their total release, I would guess, right?
Yes, sort of like their liberation. And some of these stories are in the Arabian folk tales that we know from the Book of 1001 Nights, and that's where the term genie actually came into our usage, is when these stories were translated first into French, jinn became genie. But the wishes never turn out very good for people, and that's very strong in folklore, that the first wish usually goes pretty well. The second wish, you have to be very careful what you ask for, because the genie will find a way to warp that wish. And the third wish, you usually wind up using to undo the first two wishes.
So it's almost like wishes with consequences.
Stiff consequences.
Yeah.
And one of the best examples of that in recent times in terms of entertainment treatment were the movies Wishmaster, where the very powerful genie is released from a stone and starts to wreak havoc, and then people try and outwit him by stating their wishes very carefully, but he still finds a way to turn the tables on people.
There was a Twilight Zone like that. I don't know if you remember it, Phil and Rosemary, where it was wishes with consequences. You know, somebody wanted power, they turned him into Hitler. He wanted money. You know, and I think, you know, they gave him money, but they took away his eyesight or something like that.
One where the IRS came and got most of it.
That's probably real life for a lot of people. And it was that sort of thing where I guess Serling picked up on that old folklore and the myths of the Middle East.
There were a couple of Twilight Zone treatments of genies, one in the original series and one in the remake. The people wind up at best where they started from, if not for the worse. And I do remember in the first Wishmaster, one of the wishes was the guy wished for $1 million. Okay, if you can make anything manifest, put $1 million in my bank account. So his aunt is taking an airplane trip, and she decides at the last minute to take out $1 million life insurance policy. Well, the plane crashes, and she dies, and he gets his $1 million.
Yeah, consequences. Yeah. Well, you know what? As strange as it is, Glynis McCants, our numbers lady, tells us that if you want the newfound fortunes and riches, you put an eight in your wallet or purse, and you just make an eight, keep it with you. And I got an email a year and a half or so ago from someone who said, it works. I got $250,000, but it was my inheritance. My father died. And he said, it wasn't worth it to me. But life seems to have consequences like this. I'm wondering if, you know, ancient mythology, starting maybe in the Middle East, picked up on real life events and turned them and created them into the jinn, or do you think the jinn truly did exist then?
I believe that the jinn truly exist, and I do believe in these other entities in their parallel dimensions and realms, angels, fairies, the mysterious creatures, the cryptids. I consider jinn to be a very real race of beings who have advantages over us because they have supernatural powers, but they have some limitations too.
Phil, what do you think they look like?
Well, according to the Quran, they're made of smokeless fire. To me, that indicates that they're plasma, the state between matter and energy. And they can take on different forms. And the plasma field that they're composed of is probably contained by a magnetic field, which can be rearranged. So according to the descriptions, they can take on different forms. They can take on the forms of animals. They can take on the forms of other people, humans. They could take on the forms of what they like the most. Some of them are gargoyle-like, demonic-looking entities. But the thing is that they expel energy, it seems, to keep these shapes. And they can't keep them for a long time. According to some Muslim scholars, that when a jinn takes a particular shape, like a human shape or a physical shape or a more physical shape, they become vulnerable at that time and can be killed quite easily. So they're shapeshifters, and I also believe that they are the shapeshifters mentioned by the Native American, the tricksters. Jinn are notorious for pulling pranks and tricks on people and twisting things around, especially the younger jinn. And you have to remember that the jinn live a very long time. Their lifespan in comparison to humans is very long. The Quran says 1,000 years, but you know the word 1,000 is thrown around quite a bit.
Right.
I believe they exist. They live for a longer period of time, that perhaps tens of thousands of years, and they have young. And the young seem to be very curious about human beings. When I say the young jinn, a young jinn could be 500, 600, 700, 800 years old. No one really knows. But some of these young jinn also seem to be very, very nasty because they like to things to human beings and scare them and so on. But going back a little bit to what Rosemary said about, you know, Iblis, now, it's interesting because in Islam, in the Islamic belief, the devils, the so-called devil, is a jinn by the name of Iblis, and he was cast out of paradise with his tribe, a very high order of jinn, because they would not bow to human beings, Adam.
Well, it's interesting, too, in Arabic, for devil, it's Satan. Which is
right.
Which we call Satan, of course.
Right, and that means the deceiver.
Mm-hmm.
But in Christianity, the devil is replaced by a fallen angel, not a jinn. The jinn are not mentioned in Christianity. They're replaced by demonic entities or fallen angels.
Phil, I want to come right back to that point because you bring up something I think very fascinating, and we'll be back in a moment with both Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Phil Imbrogno on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, we're going to be starting to work on some new video applications for Streamlink members, soon to be called Coast Insiders. You'll be reading about that in the upcoming future, of course, and much more to come on Streamlink, which you can join for just pennies a day by going to coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back. We're with Rosemary Ellen Guiley and Phil Imbrogno as we talk about the gin. Phil, let's pick up what you were talking about at the top, and that was the gin and the Bible. The Bible does not mention them, mentions devils, mentions demons, but not the gin. But I think we're talking about one and the same, aren't we?
Well, I believe we are. And in many of the Muslim writings, they refer to devils. And when they refer to devils, they're referring to evil jinn. And we have to remember that according to the writings that we have, is that not all jinn are evil. And I also want to clarify something about the wishes of the genie. The wishes of the genie, I don't even know how that came about. If you free the genie, you get three wishes and so on. Maybe the jinn themselves put that into our society so they can be released. I don't know, but, you know, the fact is that over in the Middle East, and as I said, I spent some time in the Middle East tracking down on the jinn. I didn't go there to really research the jinn. It just ended up that way, and that began my fascination with it. But the fishermen out in the many gulfs and the Sea of Oman and so on, when they pick up an old bottle in their net that's sealed, they immediately throw it back in because they think that perhaps that bottle might contain a jinn. And according to their legends there, some of these jinn have been sealed in those containers and held captive for a reason, because they're so evil and so powerful, and they have one thing that they want to do, and that's destroy the human race. Now, according to the legends over there, Iblis was in charge of a race of jinn that were very powerful. They would not bow to the human race, and these jinn made war against the angels and lost. As a result, because they could not be controlled, they were all imprisoned in rings or containers and so on. And it wasn't until Solomon and the building of the Great Temple that these jinn were temporarily released to work as slave labor to build the temple. So, you know, the idea of jinn over there in these captive bottles, people, they let them stay.
Rosemary, how do they affect us today?
In quite a few ways, George. In the past few years, I have done a lot of field investigations of a lot of haunted places and cases where people are plagued by persistent paranormal phenomena. And they really resisted description according to conventional things that we're familiar with, like ghosts or poltergeists or even demonic activity. And when I went back and re-examined those cases from the perspective of jinn, could we be dealing with jinn here instead of something else, they started to make a lot of sense. And then Phil and I went to John Zaffis, who's a leading demonologist, and consulted with him about many of his demonic cases. And he said that he had had the same thing, that over the years he'd had cases that just defied explanation from a demonic perspective. The cases were very resistant to conventional remedies applied against demons, but from a jinn perspective, things now start to make sense. They don't quite act like some of the other entities that we're familiar with in terms of how they can affect us and how we can deal with them. It's a whole different ball game. They're very territorial. They seem to, in many areas, have a very strong connection to land, and we think that that's because it's in proximity to a portal area where they have access between their dimension and ours. They're extremely territorial, and they can cause quite a range of phenomena that can make people very uncomfortable. Some things that would be more on the demonic sort of side, like nightmares, sexual assaults, uncomfortable poltergeist phenomena, even illness. They do have the ability to possess us, and they're very resistant to traditional remedies.
Is there anything we can do to fight them?
Yes, there are some things, and that's one thing that we're continuing to study, because a conventional exorcism may or may not work against the jinn. As Phil mentioned, they have different religious persuasions, and so, of course, if you're dealing with Christianized jinn, they may pay attention to conventional means that we have against demons. But it's also written in the literature, in the Quranic commentaries, that if the jinn don't want to follow your directives, they don't necessarily have to. They may give you lip service and tell you they'll go along with what you want them to do and then do what they want anyway.
How evil are they, Rosemary?
Some of them are quite evil. We have jinn who are the good, the bad, and the ugly. As Phil mentioned, benevolent ones, ambivalent ones, of people or jinn who don't want to deal with people. And then we have these like terrorist jinn who are very resentful for having lost their place when human beings came onto the scene, and would very much like to see us go away so they can reclaim what they once had.
How do they get here?
They come in through these portal areas, and I think Phil can address the scientific aspect of that. We believe they exist in a parallel realm, and that they have these entry points, probably where geophysical conditions are right, even the temperaments of people that they sort of find lines of energy to, because they can attach to people. And they can come into this world, they can shapeshift in a variety of ways, but that does take energy. And so they sort of go up and down in their activity as they consume energy to interact with us, and then they need to replenish.
All right, Phil, tell us about these portals. How do they make their way here?
Well, first of all, you have to understand that they're not in a parallel universe. They're actually in the same physical space that we're in, but they're in another dimension. And, of course, now M-theory, which was once called string theory, is telling us now that the space around us, the physical universe, is composed of 11 dimensions, and 10 dimensions being actual physical space, while an 11th dimension being a brain or a fabric in which all these dimensions are attached to. And now, we cannot see this other dimension being three-dimensional beings, being physical beings, but jinn are... they're actually four- and five-dimensional beings, so they can change shape. And what they do is that somehow in certain areas, they change the curvature of space, allowing a portal to open up, not a wormhole. We can't confuse portals with wormholes, which connect to other universes according to current theories in theoretical physics, is that what they do is they seem to bend space somewhat by energy manipulation, magnetic fields, and so on, allowing our dimension and their dimension to cross over, allowing them to come into our realm. But I think it requires quite a bit of energy, and I don't think all jinn can do it. I think there are some jinn who have the ability to do this, while others are more or less happy to stay where they are and not interfere with the human race. For example, shadow people.
I was just going to ask you, maybe what some people call shadow people are really the jinn?
Right. What they're doing is they're pressing upon the fabric that separates the dimension, and it's almost like if you hang a sheet out in the daytime, a white sheet, and somebody on the other side presses up against the sheet. If you pull it tight, you could see the outline of who they are, but you can't really see their face or facial features, but you know someone is behind that sheet. So when the jinn come up to their dimensional state to look at us, and they observe us because they're very interested in us, we can see their outline, and to us, they resemble a shadow. But according to what we understand, is that they have a pretty good view of us. And there's one chapter in the book that we're writing, a section of a chapter, it's called There's No Privacy in the Multiverse. Because you have all these dimensions around you, and some of these other beings can actually observe you, but you cannot see them.
You know, the subtitle of the book is Unveiling the Hidden Agendas of Genies. Rosemary, what is that hidden agenda?
It's quite varied. And the jinn who are hostile to us would like to see us out of their world. They consider this their world. And I think that they're looking for ways that they can infiltrate this world and anchor into it in some sort of form so that they have a more lasting ability to stay in our physical realm. And, of course, people are very much in the way of that. When people move into their territory, they can really act up and cause quite a few problems. And Phil and I both have cases going back for years where people have acquired homes or farms in areas, and they've been so plagued with phenomena that they wind up giving up and moving. And we think that the jinn are literally pushing them out. Some of the other ones develop these amorous attachments to us, and they want to become our companions. They attach to people and follow them around. Others want to have the experience of the physical body, and so they possess us. When they possess us, because of their form and their shape-shifting ability, it is said that they get into the blood and they circulate very fast through the body, and they can completely take it over. They have the ability to debilitate our energy fields, to put thoughts in our heads, influence our thoughts. And, of course, some of the people who are familiar with demons are going to say, well, that's really demonic. Yes, they do embody demonic traits, but they are not the same as demons. There are ways to deal with them. And one of the things that I found in my shadow people research, and Phil and I think that jinn do account for shadow people, that they're very sensitive to electricity and magnetic fields. And when people say that they sleep with their lights on because they're scared, they're actually doing something that interferes with a jinni's ability to keep form in our world, keeping the radio on, the computer, the television, the lights, can disrupt their energy field.
Now, this existence, were they created the same way we were by this divine creator, and why?
Phil, do you want to take that? Because that deals with the plasma.
According to they were all created by God, Allah, according to the legend. They were in this physical world long before human beings, and they had fantastic technology. They had cities. They were building, but they made war with each other. They started polluting the environment, and they were on the verge of destroying themselves because they became uncontrollable and very powerful. And according to the Islamic legend, Allah said to the angels, get them out of there. They're going to destroy the physical universe, put them in a place where they cannot hurt others and themselves. And they were cast out in this other dimension. And like I said, most of them went willingly because they would not defy the angels. But if you look at that, and then human beings were placed on the planet, and the planet was completely destroyed, but some jinn were made to stay here and teach human beings and guide them and help them heal the planet and establish their the human race, which eventually some of the jinn resented that they were practically in slave labor because they weren't getting anything out of return. But if you look at that legend and you look at human beings right now, it sounds like human beings are making the same mistakes that the jinn did. And sometimes I think, well, if this legend is true, maybe Allah, God, or the angels, whoever you want to call them, are going to look at human beings and say, hey, they're doing enough damage themselves. Let's get rid of them and put somebody else there.
Is there a pecking order in their society?
The jinn society does have a pecking order. For example, they seem to be ruled by kings, very powerful jinn. And we don't know if there are a number of jinn kings or one jinn king. But below that, they definitely they have clans. And the clans are, once again, they have a clan leader, and the clans are divided into families. And the families have a family leader. And yes, jinn are ranked according to their knowledge and how old they are. For example, in the human race, it depends upon how your power depends upon how much you establish yourself, how much you learn. And you could become a doctor, a lawyer, or whatever, but you can, you know, make all this money, have all this position. The jinn, it's the same way, but they study the interaction of matter and energy, and they learn how to manipulate matter and energy, but they just can't do it. It's not magic. They have to learn how to do it. For example, they somehow are able to take matter and rearrange it into different forms. But they have to learn that, and they learn it from when they're very young, and they're taught how to manipulate this, and this determines the power of a genie. This determines the power of a jinn, how much they studied. But you could have a very old jinn that does not have very much power at all because it didn't want to apply itself. And but the older jinn, of course, seem to be the most powerful. Now, there's different names for all of these jinn. It depends upon what Islamic country you go to, what Muslim country you go to.
And they all believe this, though, don't they?
Oh, yes, they all believe this, but they have different names for all of these different jinn. But if you go back into some of the idea is that in ancient Persia, they did it quite nicely. They divided them by colors, and they actually started making these jinn different colors. So you have the green jinn, who are the younger and the weaker jinn, and then you have the yellow jinn, who are more or less in between. Then you have the blue jinn, who are the oldest and the most powerful. And then you have these renegade jinn that are like terrorists, and they're called the red jinn, and they can be composed of red. They could be composed of blue jinn, green jinn, or yellow jinn. But they seem to divide their power, their pecking order, by color.
Do they communicate with each other? Do they eat?
Well, that's a good question because, you know, it seems that jinn can absorb food. What they do is they seem to take the molecules of food and break the molecules apart, and they get the sensation, partially the sensation of absorbing matter. This is why, for example, in some beliefs, you can bring fruit or flowers or tobacco to a jinn, and they will appreciate it. But they really can't sustain themselves on physical matter. It's pleasurable to them at times, but they seem to absorb energy. And one of the frightening things, of course, in the legends is one of the energies that they like to feed on is the human soul.
Interesting. Interesting, indeed. Now, we're going to come up to the top of the hour, Phil, but I want to ask you about your research that you did in the Middle East. They take this seriously. Did they take you seriously? Because how many people from this part of the world go up there to ask them about this?
Well, at first, when I heard the word jinn, I started laughing because I thought about genie, you know. Oh, the genie.
Oh, sure,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Then I realized, you know, that they took it very seriously. And it took a while because I had connections over there. So it took a while for them to get my confidence. But if I didn't have the certain connections that I had over there when I went over, I probably would have gotten no information at all.
All right. Well, stay with us. We'll be back in a moment. We'll talk more about these strange entities called the jinn when we come right back on Coast to Coast AM.